Good evening, everybody. My name's Alan. I'm an alcoholic. And it's lovely to be here. It's good to be here, good to be sober. First of all, I'd like to thank the committee and everybody who's responsible for putting this on. It's a fantastic convention. We've been coming for a number of years, so thanks. I'd also like to thank my wife Paula. She's down there in sitting with our friends Andre and Michelle. Paula's really special actually, because Paula stood up. Her birthday was the Saturday night of this convention last year. She was 20 years sober last year, which means that tomorrow she'll be 21 years sober. But what that means is she's really special, because she gets to stand up for 20 twice at this convention. And that's kind of really unique. I think that's brilliant. So I'd like to thank Paula everything she's done for me. I'd just like to try and remember something from this convention about 10 years ago. We've been coming here about 15 years. I remember being here 10 years ago, and the theme was the language of the heart. We were in the sport pit, as Carol mentioned last night. We were in the sport pit next door, and all around the room there you had these little signs, these little A4 pieces of paper, and it had the circle and the triangle with a heart in it, and it said the language of the heart spoken here. And that's kind of what we've found ever since, really. You guys speak the language of the heart. I remember speaking to Marcus from Bruges, who's no longer with us. A number of you will remember Marcus. I got to speak to Marcus a few times, and he said to me at that convention, he said, Alan, the language of the heart is like any other language. To be fluent, you need to listen. I've kind of taken that with me. When I'm on transmit, when I'm speaking, I'm not really learning anything. So I need to listen to learn. I was certainly shown how to do that. I'll go right back to the beginning. I had a very normal upbringing, or so I thought. It wasn't until I got to step four and spoke to the guy who took me through the steps and started to explain how it was when I was growing up that he pointed out a few things that I hadn't really considered before and hadn't really confronted before. I'm the youngest of four children, but my father's only child, so I have older step siblings. And I remember when I sat down, I explained it to my sponsor just like that, and he said, "That's dysfunctional." I said, how dare you? You know, that's not dysfunctional, that's just the way it was. He said, "Well, no," he said, "hang on," he said, "I'll bet your elder siblings still call you the golden boy." "Well, yeah, they do, yeah, how did you know? And why is that relevant?" Well, you know, maybe that is something you kind of need to look at. I guess you're resentful at those guys, right? Yeah, I was. I had to look at that. I picked up a drink at about 14 years old. I heard this only recently, actually. I heard this in my home group over in Basingstoke in the UK only a couple of weeks ago. A guy there said, when I started drinking, I started underachieving. And I really identify with that. That's exactly as it was for me. When I started drinking, the underachieving started too. And that's not to say that I didn't achieve things. I did achieve things. I was a very driven individual. I left school at 16 as soon as I could. And I went into the world of work and I started earning. Over the next 10, 15 years, I took pretty much every opportunity that came my way. And I rose to pretty much to the top of my chosen career. I was the finance director of a multinational business, which was sold when I was 32. At that point, I took quite a lot of money out of that business. It was at the top of the dot-com boom, And it was an IT company. We sold it very much at the top of the market. And I reinvested all of that into a company which I then rode out the dot-com bust with. After a couple of years, I didn't even have enough to pay that first year's tax bill. Then my drinking really kicked off at that point. I'd probably been drinking alcoholically since I was about 21, but if you'd have used the A word again, I would have been offended. I couldn't see it. I was pretty much the last to know that I was an alcoholic. I was a heavy drinker, okay, but I wouldn't have recognised that I needed to be here. I remember the Christmas before I came into AA. My sobriety date is the 19th of November 2004, and the Christmas 2003, I had done the usual thing, which was to buy an awful lot of booze for people I hoped weren't coming, and I then proceeded to drink that all across the Christmas and kind of first half of January, it was pretty obvious at that point that things were very well out of control. But up until that point, I thought that it was only the case of me wanting to stop and needing to stop, because pretty much everything in my life up to that point had bent pretty well and pretty effectively to my will. All I needed to do was sometimes manipulate enough people, sometimes throw money at a problem, sometimes just put some hard work in, you know, work some long days, put some graft in, and think I would usually be able to get my way. And then after that Christmas, I tried to stop drinking. And again, I heard a guy say at one of my early meetings that when he put the brakes on, it accelerated. And I really identify with that too. Okay, you can't hear me at the back. You need me to speak up. Okay, I'll speak up. So I'm sorry. As I say, that Christmas, after that Christmas, I tried to stop drinking, and I found that I couldn't. When I put the brakes on, it accelerated, as I say. For the next 9 months, my drinking was borderline terrifying, actually, particularly through that last summer into the last autumn of my drinking. As I say, my sobriety date's 19th of November. And again, you know, somebody said to me a few years after that, they said, 19th of November, 5 weeks before Christmas, that would have been tough. I didn't choose it. It chose me, you know. That was the way that was, by the time I got to the end of my drinking, the only two thoughts I could have were, I can't do this anymore, I need help. And I gather that's shared experience around here. You know, I believe now, having heard hundreds, probably thousands of people talk about their rock bottoms, I believe we go there alone. And on our way there, we're pretty much unteachable and unreachable. It's only on our way back from our rock bottom that we're reachable and teachable. When I reached out for that help, obviously there was a member of this fellowship there. He took me to my first meeting in Reading, just west of London, on that Friday night, 7,020-odd days ago. And I haven't had a drink since. And I'm not saying that to impress anybody. Clearly it impresses me. It impresses the hell out of me. That's just my story. I don't remember being told what to do. I don't even remember it being suggested what I should do. I was shown what to do. I was shown what to do by people who were doing it. People who said things like, get to plenty of meetings, stay in touch between the meetings, always know when your next meeting is, because that next meeting is always a stone, an anchorage in the future that you can get to, 24 hours time, 48 hours time, whenever. Always know when your next meeting is, they said. I was shown what to do. I had, as I said, I had 101 reasons why I wasn't an alcoholic. I had a wife, a couple of kids, big job, big mortgage, two cars on the drive, big house, you know, all of that. I had all of the badges of normal and all the badges of success. Okay, and on the inside I was dying. I had, as I say, 101 reasons why I wasn't an alcoholic, swept away by the one reason I am an alcoholic. That guy who I asked to take me through the steps, he said, "Alan, direct closed question, yes, no answer. Alan, have you lost control of your drinking? Yes or no?" Now, if the answer to that question is no, I don't know what's wrong with you, but it's unlikely to be alcoholism. It's, you know, kind of losing control of our drinking. That's shared experience around here, okay? So, and I just about had enough at that point that I was able to say, yes, I have lost control of my drinking. And I was 12 step pretty much off page 30 in the big book there in our basic text. The things that are statements on that page 30 were given to me as questions. The first one is, have you lost control of your drinking? It's the most basic description of alcoholic in the book. If you can't quite get that one at the moment, we do have other descriptions of alcoholic, but that one will do for now. Have you lost control of your drinking? He said to me, did you ever control and enjoy your drinking? Control and enjoy at the same time. And in the 5 seconds or whatever that I had to think about that, I couldn't think of a single instance when I controlled and enjoyed my drinking. For me to be enjoying drinking, there was no control. If I had to control it, I'd worked out a long time before that I was better off not picking up that first drink. Because 2 hours after I pick up the first drink, interesting, disgustingly and dangerously antisocial type things start happening. And I really need to be in the four walls of my home when I do that stuff, towards the end. So that's what I did. So I never controlled and enjoyed my drinking. Page 30 says that's the great obsession of every abnormal drinker, that somehow, someday, I'm going to do that, going to be able to control and enjoy my drinking. The third question he asked me was, which is, it's a really important one. He said, do you want to stop? You know, that tradition three thing, you know, the desire to stop drinking. He said to me, do you want to stop drinking? I said, yes, I do. I've had enough. I can't do this anymore. Okay, he said. Will you go to any lengths to stop? I didn't know what any lengths looked like. I was about to find out at about step eight what any lengths looked like. But I said, yes, I will go to any lengths. Okay, he said. This is a progressive, incurable, fatal illness. All four of those words are important. Again, all four of them are covered on page 30. Progressive, over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. Incurable, no real alcoholic ever recovers control. And fatal, many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. And I thought he overplayed that a bit. You know, clearly, I mean, you know, the it'll kill you thing is part of the pitch. But I thought he kind of laid that on a bit thick. If anything, he was really gentle with that. I've since seen how this illness kills people. Alcoholism kills people in a particularly disgusting way. It will get you on your own with enough drink to kill you. It will strip you of absolutely everything. The last thing it will strip you of is any dignity, and then it will kill you. I've seen that happen to too many good people. That's just the nature of it. And I have heard and seen some people, particularly close to me, who've taken this to the ultimate rock bottom. You know, that's the way it is, unfortunately. You know, they can't keep coming back. They were told to keep coming back. They can't keep coming back. You know, they're gone. That's it. You know, that's the nature of this. And it's an illness. It's an illness, not a weakness, I was told. And the thing about illnesses and weaknesses is the difference is willpower. Because, you know, if you think willpower is going to work on an illness, you know, try it next time you get a cold or the flu or COVID or whatever. Just, you know, I'm not having it this week. I've got a busy week. You know, I just put all of my will into just not having it. You know, see how far you get. You know, so yeah, that was important too. He took me through the 12 steps, you know, got right the way through to the end. There's no time to talk about all of that tonight, but he took me through the 12 steps. That 12 step, actually the 10th step, I'll talk a little bit about the 10th step if I can. You know, there's four words in the book that it tells me to continue to watch out for. Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment and fear. And again, I found that by working with a guy, this again was fairly recently, that my sponsor always says, you know, there's two types of people in AA, he says. Those who are moving away from a drink and those who are moving towards a drink. Which is it today? You know, and the guy I was working with recently, he said that those four things in step 10, selfishness, dishonesty, resentment and fear, those are the things that change the direction. Those are the things that if I'm moving away from a drink and I get one of those things going on in my life, I start moving towards a drink. You know, and that's, you know, that's kind of where I live my life today in those last three steps. Seeking to improve at step 11, you know, that's clearly A-level AA, right? I mean, when we got here, none of us was looking at step 11 and saying, oh goody, you know, I think I'll crack on with that one, you know. It's actually really very, very simple. You know, I'm just looking for what God's will is for me. You know, and when I find that, the power to carry that out is there. You know, it's mine. For me, God's will, the difference between my will and God's will is kind of the presence or absence of emotional pain. You know, God's will for me is never painful. You know, swimming with the current and all of that stuff. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, you know, that spiritual awakening, for me, there is a tiny little part of me today that's capable of thinking of somebody else. That is my spirit, and it's awake today. You know, and yeah, trying to practice, trying to fit these things into all my affairs, trying to put these principles in play in all my life is, you know, that's a lifetime's work. I've got a lifetime to do it, a day at a time. You know, the courage to change. I remember, again, in my early days, you know, Jim saying to me, you know, take those 12 steps, you will change. There is guaranteed change in those 12 steps. You know, and he said, by the look of you, Alan, it will be a change for the better. I didn't like the sound of that, but he was right, you know. Yeah, I mean, what can I tell you about recovery and about, you know, the 19 years since? It's everything I have in my life today, I've either been given by AA or I've been given a new look at it through AA. I first met Paula in AA, 2009, and, you know, we had a row about something. I can't remember what it was, but we'd been together about 6 weeks. We had a row about something or other, probably something to do with my ex-wife or my kids or whatever. As we were making up, we decided that we were just going to do the fun stuff. And that's kind of pretty much all we've been doing ever since, really. We've been doing the fun stuff all over the world. You know, all over the... You know, we love coming here, for instance. You know, this convention's in our diary every year. We used to come with the Andover groups, but now that coach doesn't run anymore, so we come over on our own. You know, we load up a car and over we come, you know. So yeah, we, you know, the freedom that I have today, you know, when those promises are read, we are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. You know, that I can point to all of those promises, but particularly that one. I had to give up a lot of what I thought was freedom and happiness for a new freedom and a new happiness to come in. But you know, I can point to that and own that today, you know. It's wonderful to be here. It's great to be sober, and I think I'll leave it there. Thanks very much.